things. The minutes of the previous meeting are in the pack, and they've been approved by the FIC. We had the last FIC, as usual, was last Thursday, where we discussed the financial report, which Bill's talked about. The only thing that I'd like to add to that is that we, as board members, were very concerned about the financial situation as we are. And we've asked for a few things. We've asked for a comparison of the increased cost to activity, so we can see, are we really doing extraordinarily high amounts of work that can explain it. We expressed Andreas in particular concern about the bank and agency spend and tried to understand it. We don't yet, but we need more information. We basically asked for a bridge between, because we are going to have extraordinary items which will ensure that we do have a surplus this year, but they're extraordinary items like sale of assets, and they're not likely to occur next year. So I think it will be useful for the board to see what's our operating position, taking those out, and we've asked for that. So that hopefully will come back to the January FIC. We discussed briefly the planning process for next year, which we approved the framework, but it's all a bit nebulous because guidance from both TDA and NHS England and commissioners is not very clear at this minute. We had one good news story. We discussed world-class supply chain, which is an initiative that is looking at trying to make cost savings from our procurement. And there's a pilot that's gone in. I know it's insignificant. It saved 200,000. But it's a pilot gone into, I think, one of the theatres in QEQM on the fourth floor. And it's just in using inventory, they've saved 200,000 in a short space of time. It will be rolled out, but it's a good thing for us to do and take forward. So hopefully it will form part of next year's SIPs. We were required by a previous audit committee meeting to look at land valuation. We have an impairment that is going to come on to the accounts at the end of this year, which is basically, it's a book entry, it doesn't mean anything. But what we are doing is we are writing off the costs of the land based on a methodology approved by the NHS. All it means for us is we pay less dividend. And if we decide to sell off the land, it just comes back onto our books, and that's the year we pay dividend. But in the interim, we make savings in the money we pay back to government. So that's a good thing. We also had a paper that was on the work plan on patient transport. This has been a particularly interesting subject for Jerry. And we continue to overspend on patient transport. And the paper that came to us basically was looking at a new framework to try and contain it. And we looked at the framework, but basically it's when the review's taken place and the results occur, we've asked for it to come back to us in 6 months. So there are new measures which will go in to look at what which patients really need. And the questions have been extended to how do they go to shop and things like that, which is really valid. So that's really mainly what we covered at the FIC. I think the big concern is the headline financial position.
Okay. Yeah, and that a lot of that is still staff costs going up and agency stuff.
Yes.
Do you want to say something about rostering and how we can get on top of that?
So one good piece of work that we had looked at the last executive committee was how we use our electronic rostering system, eRoster, that's been in place for a number of years now. And we had an independent group of people called Allocate come in that designed that rostering system. And there are a group of 7 KPIs that you can use to monitor the effectiveness of your rostering system. Now, why is this important? Obviously, the vast majority of our costs relate to staffing costs, and the rostering system was put in place to try and ensure that we have both efficient rosters but also very effective rosters in terms of having the right seniority of staff on any ward at any one time. We've done a pilot now reviewing with Allocate 3 of our ward areas, and what that's shown is that there are real opportunities for us to improve both the efficiency with which we roster, but also the safety with which we roster. So it's really two sides of the same coin. How do you roster more efficiently? So a good example of that is ensuring that you smooth how frequently people take annual leave across the course of a year, so everyone's not taking annual leave in the same month and putting up your bank and agency, but smoothing it so that it's equal across the year, and ensuring that your permanent staff are doing a fair mix of day shifts, evening shifts and night shifts, because obviously if you have bank and agency working predominantly night shifts and evening shifts, it's more expensive. So I think with that allocate review that we've done, we're now rolling that out to each of the wards across the sites and using those 7 KPIs to really ensure that we are rostering effectively. That will certainly help us in terms of getting control of bank and agency. The other key part of getting control of bank and agency is obviously getting down our vacancy levels. And Jane may like to make some comments about what we've been doing systematically to reduce the vacancy rates across the trust.
Can you? You'll know that we did a pilot from the resourcing team in terms of centralising as much recruitment as we could. That's been incredibly successful. So we're now rolling that out right across the organisation and working very specifically with each of the divisions in terms of their strategic people planning, in terms of what they're going to need going forward, based on what we know that their turnover is or likely to be. We have been bringing down the vacancy rate over the last 2 months, though it's crept up very slightly again. We still have 400 people waiting to join at the moment, but we're also focusing not only on the central recruitment, but also on the very specific hard-to-reach, as we've mentioned before, for private patients as well. I've changed the leadership in the resourcing department recently as well, with a view to getting better processes and turning things around a lot quicker than we had been doing previously as well. So there are lots of things that we're doing in terms of process and ways of working, which I think will support the business. But we've also identified where we've signed off recruitment, where actually there's been no activity by either the local managers or the centre as well. And we absolutely understand now where we have everything that's going on in terms of recruitment activity in the trust. So I hope that that will start to help us to still further reduce our vacancy rates. I have to say, in London, we are amongst the best in terms of our vacancy rate, and it is one of the lowest in London. So we want to make sure that we keep hold of that mantle and start to drive that down, and make sure that when we bring new starters in, that the bank and agency rate goes down accordingly. And that's the big test now, I think, is to make sure that happens.
Okay. Thank you, Jerry.
I'm delighted to hear the progress we're making on the rostering side, but I'd just like to revert to the point that Sarika made on the transport. We first discussed this in audit and risk, must be at least 18 months ago, I think, now. I mean, to me, this is a no-brainer. If a patient needs transport, it's because there is a necessity, in which case it should be paid for by the commissioners, or that patient has been kept too late through treatments and therefore we have an obligation to get them home. There should not be a major cost on this trust through patient transport. And this is another area. I don't know what else we can do. We can't keep looking at it. We've just got to take some decisions and do something about it. Because the money that can be saved through through areas like this can be spent on frontline services. And it's either that the commissioners won't pay, in which case they should pay for it, or we need to change our way we do things so that patients can be getting home at reasonable times. And if the services that are providing the result that our patients can't get home early, then those departments should be charged with the transport. It's as simple as that. So, you know, please, can we get resolution of this?
Thank you, Jerry. So in the last FIG meeting, we presented a paper on patient transport services and some of the actions we're taking to make sure that the national awarded eligibility criteria are being adhered to and making sure that we're efficient in the way that we allocate transportation. There are a mixture between those patients who have a medical need for transport and absolutely the NHS must fund, and there are those who have social reasons for being able to reclaim their funding, which is outside.